Welcome back to episode 306. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thanks. So, well, this week, a couple of interesting stories we can get through. You heard about Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel is indicting 16, what she calls fake electors, for an alleged plot to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Of course, these fake electors were alternative electors for Trump who were acting, at least from my reading, well within the law. I think the idea of having alternative electors isn't unprecedented. It occurred, I think, 1960. And there's been discussions about it every time there's a disputed election, presidential election. This is, of course, the push to criminalize political dissent continues. As we heard news this week of former President Trump is facing yet another indictment for supposedly interrupting the peaceful transfer of power by simply challenging the election results in several states, right. You know, where the, of course, the voting laws were illegally changed. The irony here is that, you know, while actions of the alternative electors in Michigan and Donald Trump were perfectly legal, the manner in which the votes were cast in those states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and many other states, was illegal because they illegally changed the voting laws because of COVID, mail-in voting and such. That was instituted by the various governors, not state legislatures. Of course, the Constitution grants state legislatures plenary authority in determining the manner in which presidential electors are chosen. That's so, strictly speaking, presidential elections are not federal elections, they are state elections. Of course, in both of these cases, and the 1,000 or so criminal cases that have been prosecuted in relation to the Capitol Hill, event, riot, insurrection, if you will, whatever they want to call it, on January 6th, federal prosecutors, with the help, of course, of the mainstream media and the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., which is a kangaroo court, have spun a false narrative of an insurrection, which has effectively made protesting suspected electoral fraud a crime. This is ironic because the Democrats are now equating challenging election results with an insurrection. Of course, this is ridiculous. The left, for decades now, has kind of made it their thing to challenge election results. I think the last legitimate Republican president elected, according to the left, was George H.W. Bush in 1988. In 2000, 2004, and 2016, accusations were made about election results. Of course, in 2016, you had the whole Russia collusion hoax. That was a deep state effort to actually interfere in the election that we've just recently has been exposed. I also sent you that Hollywood, the Hollywood video, where in 2016, Hollywood celebrities were recruited in an effort to reverse the election by appealing to Republican members of the Electoral College to vote against Donald Trump in the upcoming Electoral College vote. And of course, several members of Congress sought to keep Trump's victory from being certified in 2016. So again, if the left doesn't have had any double standards, what have any standards at all, as they say? But
so. Right. I mean, Trump, in that context, was just a stand-in for the white male, for Heritage America, mm-hmm. MAGA. You know, the idea that Make America Great Again was racist, dog whistling for Make America White Again. And all of this whole process, every bit of it, is just designed to intimidate heritage, people who have Heritage America backgrounds. I mean, that's why they go through all this, is just to keep us from feeling like we have some real say in democracy or so-called democracy. And the degree that the elections were fixed, the last presidential elections, I mean, that's just the base. That wasn't the worst case. I mean, this is, going forward, I would assume they're just going to, strip away almost all the facade. I mean, you're going to get, in my opinion, not immediately, but within a few election cycles, to like a African dictator, getting 99% of the vote. Mm-hmm. It's because we've transitioned from a society that would be described as high trust to one that has no trust.
Well, that's right? Diversity, isn't it?
That is the fruits of diversity.
Yeah.
And so because they're able to demonize Heritage America. You know, there really isn't any way to slow them down or to stop them other than just direct physical confrontation, because, you know, they have marched through the institution. Cultural Marxism has won, basically, and they can control the institutions, the media, to just create the propaganda, the propaganda that was defined in the authoritarian personality, to set up a kind of dictatorship, right? I mean, that's really what we're experiencing. And the, there's this theatrical production of, you know, the president and, you know, the vice president, whatnot, but it's all theater. And I think it's the case on both sides of the political spectrum. Mike Pence was interviewed by Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. And Carlson asked him two questions. He's talking about the Ukraine. He said, well, what about, you know, religious freedom? Does that matter? And Pence says, well, I talked to a guy there and he said there wasn't any problem.
Literally,
it was just absurd. And then Carlson asked him about, you know, we're giving all this money to the Ukraine, and there's all of the American cities that are collapsing. Isn't that something that really needs the money and the funding and the attention? And Pence said, well, that's not my problem. I mean, literally, he was just there to cheerlead for stuffing as much weaponry into the Ukraine so they can commit suicide, national suicide, faster. And so he was just totally exposed. I mean,
so overseeing the well-being of the United States, or look,
not my problem. That's not
his problem,
issue.
But Ukraine,
not his issue. So
Ukraine and also Israel are his problems. That's his priority.
Those are the issues, and the depopulation of the Ukraine and the deification of Israel, seemingly the only two things that matter to him.
What's weird is, again, looking at this, the idea of having alternative electors was never thought as being illegal. You do that when there's a dispute election, so you have representation, electoral college. That's what the folks in Michigan are doing when they walked up to the door of the legislature and were kept out of entering the legislature because there was a dispute over the election results. So therefore, it's a question of whether or not the Republican electors were should be counted versus the Democrat, Joe Biden's electors. That was the whole dispute in these several states. And now they're sort of rewriting history as if these elections were clean, weren't any questions with the results in Michigan or in Pennsylvania, Georgia, for that matter, or Arizona. All these states had serious problems because the manner in which the election was held, particularly mail-in voting and stuff, of course, that also with the voting machines themselves, which just still seems to be some question. But now it's gone down as some sort of a conspiracy theory, if you will, some sort of QAnon type thing, if you think there's anything wrong with elections, although everyone knows elections have always been sloppy in the United States. It just increased greatly in the COVID election because of the mail-in voting. There's no chain of custody or ways of keeping it orderly. It's also extended out several days. And so you had this, you know, middle of the night, the dramatic shift in voting in all these states. It all shifted in favor of Joe Biden. And of course, supposedly he got 81 million votes for a man who didn't even leave his basement. You know, he couldn't even get five people in a parking lot during the campaign. Yet we were told he got most votes than anyone present in history, than any other candidate in history of the United States, which is, in my, you know, my understanding is absurd. I just don't buy that. So but like I said, when there's a disputed election, there's nothing illegal about having alternative electors. I think in 1960, Hawaii did this, and I guess it turned out Hawaii did go to Jack Kennedy in 1960. Originally, it had gone to Nixon, and Democrats, I think, put up some electors claiming they represented their states in the Electoral College, claiming that they actually won the vote there. And it turns out Kennedy did win Hawaii in that election. So there's precedent here. And again, the attempt to criminalize this and call it a plot when everyone knew what they were doing. And the moment the elections were thrown into question, the legislatures, and this is why the Republican Party never intended to really challenge this, is in every state where this was challenged, I think it was in Arizona, Michigan, Georgia, those were the states that turned it, from what I recall. And Republicans controlled the legislature in all those states, and they could have, under the Constitution, name their own electors. And there was an immediate discussion about that when the election was in dispute. But then all the Republicans just backed down. I think even the Michigan majority or the head of the Republican Michigan legislature actually went to Washington, D.C. to talk about this. Maybe they were told not to do it. I recall in December 2020 that was happening. So again, the idea that that there was a disputed election and then therefore there are alternative electors, it wasn't a plot. It was just how Republicans in those various states were going to see that their states were representing the Electoral College. Now they're trying to criminalize it. And the same way they're trying to criminalize the protest on Capitol on January 6th and trying to implicate Donald Trump in the riot that ensued, which was mostly outside and instigated, as it turns out, by federal agents. And what occurred in the Capitol was fairly orderly and peaceful. It was, you know, so it wasn't really that big of a deal.
Of course, they were just, you know, there was a few agents that created some photo ops, like the two idiots that smashed the window with the door wide open right next to them and the guards waving people in. So there was some photo ops, but the insurrection meme was deliberately created. Obviously, this was something that they had been working on. And it was done to attack it as insurrection, as a way of intimidating basically the, you know, heritage Americans from thinking that they had the right to challenge fraudulent, their perception of a fraudulent
election. Didn't like more than 20 attorneys general sue to challenge election results? And the Supreme Court just said, we're not going to hear it. They didn't say there's no evidence. They didn't want to hear it. Although that's precisely the type of dispute that the Supreme Court was created to adjudicate. Actually, it wasn't there to declare, you know, transgender rights like a human right. We can talk about that later. It was there to just solve this actual type of dispute between the states.
And they, of course, sued. It's exactly what it's designed to do.
Yeah, because the Texas sued, said that, you know, the way the laws were changed in Georgia and Pennsylvania actually was a violation of their voting rights, because you can't have states running fraudulent elections. And so there was a lot of questions regarding the election because of, like, mail-in voting, you know, that sort of stuff. And there's always been a problem with that.
It's going to get a lot worse in the next presidential cycle. I think they want a close election and a very heated, obviously there will be, you know, obviously with the kind of issues that Americans will be choosing between. But I think that they're going to have another obvious fraud. And then they will just stare right into the TV and say, you know, this is the fairest election that any nation has ever had.
Well,
anyone as otherwise is a traitor.
They didn't just admit, you know, well, not only do you have the question again of actually ballot stuffing, ballot box stuffing, if you will, with the mail-in voting and that sort of thing. You have the issue of the all leading up to the election, where it was admitted, Time Magazine admitted that a campaign was instituted between the major media institutions and corporations and organized labor to control the flow of information to secure the election. And then you, of course, what's been revealed this past year with the Twitter files, the suppression of information regarding, you know, Hunter Biden's laptop, the corruption of the Biden family, that might have factored in how people voted. But that was, the FBI actually pressured Twitter and other social media companies to stifle that information. You had, you know, of course, the New York Post story that was suppressed by Twitter and social media. That, you know, and that was apparently spearheaded by the FBI. And then you also have, we now know that the whole Russia collusion thing, or the stories regarding Hunter Biden and the Biden scandal, when, you know, there was a campaign or a letter that was commissioned by Anthony Blinken, not the current state, U.S. Secretary of State, who he asked the assistant director of the CIA to commission a letter of more than 50 intelligence officials to sign a letter saying it had all the markings of a Russia intelligence operation.
Yeah.
But we may be wrong, you know, but that was commissioned to get it in the media so that information was manipulated in cahoots with the deep state, the intelligence community, FBI, and social media. The current Secretary of State was involved in that, and he hasn't been asked to resign or even answer for it. You know, so you have that. That's not collusion. And that's not election interference. Jeez.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the upshot is the federal elections are a cesspool. there is simply not a lot, in maybe in a few states, but in general, there's nothing that can be done. You can't affect them because they have enough control. The secret society has enough control to, you know, create the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there's no real choices. I mean, Hillary or Trump, or, you know, what difference does it make? So what needs to be done is to focus on local elections and on not just on local sovereignty, you know, the mayors and sheriffs, and whatnot, but to try to create bifurcated villages and towns. I mean, you have to get out of the city as well as getting out of the, you know, the federal political system as much as you can, because the cities are now reflecting the low trust third world culture mm-hmm. of America. They're simply too violent to live in. I mean, I can just give you a lot of personal anecdotes from friends and family that I have. And it's, you know, in the major cities in the West Coast, it is just simply now getting too dangerous to live there. And so people have to get out, get into an enclave, try to become politically active in the enclave in terms of the local issues, which is, you know, self-defense. Start with food. I mean, I'm a scratchy record. I've done this 100 times, I know, but I don't know what else to say, Tim. When you know, everything that you're describing there is true. Everything should have been analyzed thoroughly by the media and wasn't. And the ability for the average citizen, the heritage American citizen, to change any of that is basically nil. So, you know, we are not a large enough political force at the moment to really have much impact on that corruption, but we can certainly use the energy that's engendered and the, you know, the need for self-defense to try to create areas that we can live in and become strong and grow. You know, the good news here, Tim, is all of the collection of humans they have as voting blood donors, basically. You know, they're not actually, you know, like humans or federal agency. They're not having any kids, so they will start dying out pretty fast. And if the Heritage Americas, if we can just breed up another generation, believe me, we got a shot here, because I've seen some statistics on the you know, production, family production, and child production of the woke political class, and it's zero. So they don't have, they only have one generation of this craziness. Mm-hmm. And they'll be off the planet.
The out in California, the California Attorney General Rob Bonta announced on Friday that California will restrict state-funded travel to Missouri, Nebraska, and Wyoming as a result of recent legislation passed in those states restricting so-called transgender rights. The travel ban was mandated by the California Assembly Bill 1887. It requires the Attorney General to update the website to the current list of states that are subjected to the travel ban. I don't quite understand how this works, because states can't do that. It has something to do with state funding, I guess. According to the press release published by the Attorney General's office, Bonta said legislation targeting the transgender community is part of a concerning trend of discriminatory practices in states across the country, aiming to roll back hard-won protections. The press release also stated that such laws specifically target marginalized transgender youth by preventing them from participating in sports in accordance with their gender identity, because that's boys pretending to be girls or vice versa, but mostly boys pretending to be girls so they can swamp girl sports, sports programs, as well as restricting access to critical gender affirming healthcare services. So these are states that have seemed to actually ban so-called gender-affirming care. That's the mutilation and poisoning of children, and also the protection of women's sports, which I thought was the whole idea of pre-Title IX. So it's funny how they spin this. So California is just trying to... So,
I mean, I don't think any of those states have actually banned transgender process for adults. I think that the laws were focused on minors.
Minors, yeah. I'm for banning for adults. I would think the profession would ban it. It's a terrible thing to do to somebody, to mutilate someone, to exploit their psychological problems or their neuroses to make money off them and mutilate them. So basically, there's a growing list of states, basically middle America, not the crazy left coast and west coast or left coast and east coast, whatever you want to call it. So California, I guess, is trying to, impose some sort of sanction. I don't know how much influence or consequences will come from this. Apparently, it's state-funded travel or something. I don't even know if this is even constitutional.
It's completely absurd. It's just grandstanding, and it's done for the purpose of intimidating or to enforce this the psychological power of this social agenda that they have rolled out of turning people into transgender identities.
But what is it? You're just sterilizing them.
Yeah, it is, of course, a form
that's
of sterilization.
That's all it is. It's just you're sterilizing them.
That is the best part of it, frankly. But yeah. I mean, but the fact is that it's also has a political component, because let's face it, how many conservative Republicans are in the transgender community? But moreover, it's just raw evil. You know, I've mentioned the statistics about the high percentage of people who are actually minors who are doing the transition that are autistic, mm-hmm. and also who are having severe mental problems. You know, you're talking mm-hmm. about like 70%, those two categories. So these aren't people who are even able to make a coherent moral and psychological choice that's, you know, they're going to have to live with the rest of their lives. I mean, these people can't buy beer, for God's sake. So
yeah.
Why in the world would they, you know, be trusted with this decision? And of course, it's because it is an agenda. This is being done to society. There's good, actually one couple of good science paper on sudden onset of gender dysphobia, which is, you know, transgenderism. And they point out that, you know, gee, it sure looks like an agenda. It looks like propaganda. It looks like it's, just coming out of nowhere. And these things are, they talk about the strong possibility that the choices are being made because of social pressure. And this is the key, you know, kind of issue, is that they will make the claim that actually there's this little voice inside of the human that is the authentic gender identity, and that in many cases God screwed up, and in fact they have the chromosomes of a male, but they are the soul of a woman,
the spirit. Very scientific.
But you see, the whole thing is just ridiculous, because if you're going to do a transition, you want to at least start out with the idea of can we align you with your chromosomes? Is that possible? Is there any kind of way to do that through therapy? And then this is all happening without the critical conversation occurring.
There's certainly a lot less carnage in that direction, as opposed to trying to reverse.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need any operations and mm-hmm. hormone therapy, which is toxic. But moreover, these kids have extremely low testosterone, the males, and sperm production, I mean, critically low, like 60% of baseline. And they also have very high levels of estrogen mimicking plastics. The first thing that you need to discuss is the ones who actually are susceptible to the propaganda, because there is obviously right now a very strong push for that. Are they feeling, in the case of male, are they feeling feminine? Because this is just the result of this chemical attack on their bodies, right? Where's that discussion? Where is the actual, analysis of what is in the bodies of the young males that want to be susceptible to this propaganda?
No, instead of looking for estrogen mimickers and other chemicals, which...
So anyway,
they're looking for female spirits in male bodies, or vice versa.
The spirit that comes for it. But like I sent you that article where mm-hmm. in one classroom, 13 out of 30 young people identified in some way with LGBT. And this is, you know, you know this isn't reflected in any way in our society, 32%. When I was, I've been in a couple public spaces recently where I was able to observe humanity in the thousands. I didn't even see really anyone I was sure was gay, right? So this isn't this, the fact that there is some group that has 30%, you know, with that perspective, it's like Brown University. I mean, the polls can be artificial and fake and, you know, push polls. There may be certain ways to get these results. But the fact is that the young people are susceptible to the propaganda.
Well, might it be that the schools have been turned into grooming and indoctrination centers?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, just an idea.
I mean,
yeah.
here's an example of that is we had the American Federation of Teachers has a conference in Washington, D.C. And the first on their agenda is promoting LGBTQ in the classroom. This is what this education union run by Randy Weingarten, Ms. Randy Weingarten. So they are endorsing the idea of schools promoting this in pre-K to fifth grade. Is this how LGBTQ issues with how that affects young students, including age-appropriate responses to common? Really, what's age appropriate? I love that their definition of age appropriate. Oh my lord, gender and family topics. This is pre-K. That's kindergarten. It's preschool, to fifth grade. Discussing these things. So this might be why you're getting those numbers in schools when you have major teachers unions like the American Federation of Teachers approving this. You also have this issue again out in California. You had a local school board trying to reject these textbooks that were promoting the gay rights agenda, lionizing Harvey Milk in this local school board, which is more conservative, at first rejected it. The governor out there arbitrarily imposed a $1.5 million fine. I don't think he has the power to do that. Apparently backed down, but they're promoting gay rights in civics textbooks, as if this is something to do with knowing about how you know your government is supposed to function.
It's in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, and there's another thing. And you know, Gavin Newsom, a while back, his wife has made money off that very program. Gavin Newsom's wife, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, the wife of the California Governor Newsom, has been criticized for allegedly making a profit from screening her gender justice films to public school children. She's made over the past decade more than like $1.5 million promoting this curriculum or this instruction in the classrooms. So his own wife has collected a cool, you know, $1.6 million. It's called the Representation Project. This is, by the way, for more than 10 years they've been doing this out there. So now they're yielding some results here. But I'm saying, if you wonder why you're getting those numbers, well, here you go. You have the American Federation of Teachers. You have Governor Newsom's own wife who's cashing on a program that's literally grooming kids for this stuff. And US.
Yeah, and the kids are confused and given all the propaganda, and then this is what you get. And they will very aggressively transition any of the kids who they think they can into hormone therapy.
The gender, they're roping in kids, preschool kids for the stuff.
Yeah, and they'll give them hormone therapy. And the thing is, you have to wonder, you know, all of the toxicities that I mentioned, now you throw into that hormone therapy? I mean, what chance does this young boy have of developing into, you know, like a regular man, a biological male? I mean, he's actually been ruined. And, you know, this is as tragic and sad a condition as humanity has ever produced.
Evil.
But the thing is,
this isn't an earthquake.
Yeah, that's right.
People are doing this.
This is a test of parents, and you just have to get the kid out. Doesn't matter. I mean, this is literally a death sentence in a way for the child.
Well, does your kid have to learn about Harvey Milk? I mean, really, is that essential for civics, Harvey Milk? And Harvey Milk, who abused teenagers?
Yeah. Do you want your boys? Artistic young male kind of, you know, like 10-year-old or 8-year-old, to be given hormone therapy and hormone blockers? If you're a parent, to me, this is basically a kind of murderous assault. So the only thing a parent can do is to homeschool. You've got to get out or to get the kid into some kind of private school if you can afford it, where you can monitor very closely the curriculum, but you cannot leave them in these cesspools. So, there really isn't much that can be given in terms of, you know, advice other than to get out. What can a parent do? The teachers' union is so inculcated with this, and they have so much political and pedagogical power, right?
Well, in California, right? they've created the demographics where they can get away with this.
Yeah. So the thing is, yeah, you know, California, I'm sure we've got like 5-8 million healthy or, you know, close to being healthy young kids. If the parents are alert, they will just organize and, try to find a way to give them a real education.
But here's the thing is, the fact that this has been inserted into the programs, now it takes extraordinary action to prevent it.
Yes. No,
there was never a plebiscite or a vote or an initiative, like proposition, whatever, to decide whether.
Even now it would be a 90-10 political loser.
Yeah.
But it never will be put to a vote because it's just like the vaccine mandates.
Well, schemers like Randy Weingarten and of her ilk, of her tribe, they're experts at doing this, inserting themselves, insinuating themselves, and taking over these organizations and using it for their own purposes, their own agenda.
Right, and the purpose here is to just absolutely lay waste to the minds of the children of Heritage America.
Here's a case that's, I thought this was just sort of the absurdity of it all. There is a federal judge blocks Arizona law banning men from women's sports. That's the headline.
Well, there's a novel idea.
Wait. So what is about women's sports, don't you understand? No, it's not that simple, you see, right? It's not that simple. It's very complicated. Actually, it's very simple. It's women's sports. And men aren't supposed to participate in women's sports for obvious reasons. A federal judge blocked an Arizona law that prevents men from competing in women's sports teams. U.S. District Court for the District of Arizona Judge Jennifer Zips, an Obama appointee, issued a preliminary injunction against Arizona's Save Women's Sports Act. The family of two, just listen to this, the families of two boys who identify as girls, backed by the National Center for Lesbian Rights, fired the lawsuit in April, alleging Arizona's law violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment and Title IX. So I'm sure when they passed the 14th Amendment back in 1865, they were thinking that, gee, we need to make sure that boys can pretend to be girls and participate in women's sports programs. What's interesting is Title IX, if I recall, was created to encourage and protect women's sports programs as part of education opportunities. But Title IX is supposed to protect women's sports programs. So now it's being twisted to destroy women's sports programs.
Yeah, there was two cases of males who had transitioned in their minds to being women who were then involved in martial arts.
Yes.
And in both cases, they damaged, really physically damaged their feminine opponent, who have, for among other things, has thinner craniums than males do. So you really you need to have a kind of a sexual balance. Well,
the judge found that transgender athletes who sued do not have a competitive advantage over other girls, and they do not pose a safety risk. She just says that, I guess.
Right.
Male athletes competing in women's divisions have taken titles from women on a number of occasions. Transgender cyclist Austin Kilbs won first place in the women's division of the International Cycling Union's Tour Gilly Race in May. Transgender swimmer Leah Thomas broke multiple records. Oh, yeah.
No, it's so ridiculous.
I think Leah Thomas even has a girlfriend.
Right? It's like a 1-6 insurrection. I mean, this is just Orwellian doublespeak propaganda. They feel that they have enough control over the media and enough political backing that they can simply lie right into the camera.
Well, here's this judge. She's supposed to be
and they won't be pulled down or impeached or something.
Well, this judge is supposed to be interpreting the law and rendering a decision. And her reasoning here, to call it that, is a stretch. She reasoned or says playing on a boys' team would directly contradict plaintiff's medical treatment. gender-affirming care. Again, they're calling this medical treatment. For gender dysphoria, again, this thing that doesn't, you can't really point to, they just say it exists, and would be painful and humiliating, zip throws. Therefore, you distort the 14th Amendment and Title IX because these, supposedly these two kids' feelings. Now, these kids are being raised by lesbian parents. Right. So I'm sure they're set up for this, right? I mean, this is obvious what's going on here. But
the humiliation of the biologically correct individuals in terms of their gender, the humiliation that they are experienced by losing, if you're, you know, to these giant males who pretend to be women. I mean, that's not even considered.
So their feelings don't matter?
Yeah, they have no legal status whatsoever. It's like the 1-6 insurrectionists, you know, the preposterous, the idea that this is an insurrection is just insane, but they have no power because the legal system that is controlling them is a cesspool, it's corrupt. And the problem is that we continue to give lip service to these cesspools, these artificially created systems, you know, like the judicial system monitoring the 1-6, or the judge who is making the idea that, you know, we can't humiliate these children that want to transition. I mean, these things are ridiculous, but you know, we have to see in back of them. We can't continue to try to reason with these people and to like use legal process and things like that. You have to separate. You've got to bifurcate.
You can't rely on the law because look how they interpret it. She's literally saying the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause somehow grants the right for delusional boys who think they're girls participate in girls' sports programs. And she's even saying that Title IX requires it. I mean, it's the destruction of Title IX.
Well, yeah, but she's also saying that there isn't any competitive advantage. Here she's just simply into lying.
Yeah, what is she talking about?
This is ridiculous, and yet she can say it and not be impeached the next day, having removed as a judge, because she knows that the political system will support her and the media will support her, and they can get a few, you know, people in white smocks pretending to be scientists who will say, well, yes, you know, all of this, the muckety muck about the need to, you know, like align this little soul inside of these children with their, you know, with the actual biology and not with what, you know, is the stuff that they were born with. So, okay. There you go. Yeah, we tried. Now get out of that system. If enough parents leave, if the system, if 90%, you know, of the real important heritage American children leave, you know, it'll be a better world. And you can, you know, there's centrifugal kind of stuff that'll take place. The setting up of the homeschools will be easier and easier the more who come in. And it can become strong enough that it has some political defensibility. You know, if you get like 10 million families or thereabouts that are actually involved in that system, they would have a little bit more political power and they could move to areas, you know, that they would be supported politically. But this is what we have to do. You know, I mean, if you're a parent and you're like in, you know, say San Francisco, and, you know, what can you do? What in the world can you do other than leave? I just don't see any other alternative.
I'm interested to see who's paying for the lawyers for this lawfare. What organizations and what tribe they belong to?
Open Society,
probably. Yeah, something like that, or some, you know, Pritzker's or something. There's been a spate. I don't know if I sent this to you, but it was all these tweets by various supposedly conservative Republican senators, professing their fealty to Israel. There was Josh Hawley, who made news a while back confronting Attorney General Merrick Garland for his abuse of a Catholic family, a Christian family, a pro-life activist, and, you know, sort of the malicious prosecution, attempt to prosecute a man who had the audacity to defend his son from being assaulted by a Jewish fellow in Philadelphia outside an abortion clinic. But of course, Josh Hawley he identifies himself as a Christian constitutional lawyer and husband. He had this to say about Israel. "You have to carry me out on a slab before I compromise my defense of the Jewish people, their greatness, their history, and their safety in the state of Israel." And you have this Mike Pence, who you mentioned with his interview with Tucker Carlson. He said, Mike Pence, again, who also identifies himself as a Christian, says, "America stands with Israel today as a critical moment in the life of our relationship. We stand with Israel for the same reason America people have always stood for with Israel. We stand with Israel because her cause is our cause, her values are our values, her fight is our fight. We stand with Israel because we believe in the right and right over wrong and good over evil. And we stand with Israel because Israel's very existence is proof that God's promises are true." Then we have...
So this is insane. And of course, if you look at the Gospels, you can see that they don't really produce this concept.
Isn't Zionism a 19th century ideology?
Yeah, 19th century. And the thing is, if you think about those statements and then go back to Palmerston and Shaftesbury in like 1840, when they came forward and said, now is the time for the Jews to return to the Holy Land. From that public disclosure to Pence's statement, it's just one chronic stream of purported Christians who have, for some reason, without any explanation, just adopted this slavish deification of the state of Israel. It doesn't come from the text. It doesn't come from historical Christianity. It just came out of the Grandmaster Freemasons, the Cecils, the Churchills, and Palmerston, this collection, and then transitioned from these proto-Zionists, who are all Freemasons, into modern Zionism, which was a Freemason-funded project, tipped to Stern, and then became, the Exodus, kind of Jewish thing in the beginning of the 20th century, but they'd already been at it for 60, 70 years. And now when you get to Pence, oh man, I mean, put this guy in the historical context. I really want to see some kind of DNA test on that puppy, because I am betting that Pence would be from a converso family. Americans, especially in Europe, it's not as common, but in America, there is this complete unawareness of the converso issue of, in the 17th through 18th century, you had all of these Jewish families that converted, but actually then retained their Jewish ethnic, understanding. And I think that when you look at a lot of these Christians, if you actually ask them or could see a DNA test, that's what you'd see. I think you'd see that actually that they have really very strong, not all of them, I'm sure, but a lot of them have a very, very strong just genetic trajectory. And they have been living in this world, the world of the Murano, which is the, the world of, of overt Christian, but crypto Jewish religious faith, because these individuals would be, it would be logical for people like that to take the position that the hysterical Zionism of these purported Christians, right? Because otherwise, without that as the background, you just have to assume someone like Pence is mentally ill. I mean, it's to that degree of craziness that he cannot see any nuance whatsoever in terms of the behavior of the state of Israel vis-a-vis the Palestinians and the rest of the world. I mean, he can't see any nuance at all. The idea that it is literally, God's manifestation, on the planet. I mean, this is, there has to be some explanation, some
trajectory. Well, yeah, I was like, did God bomb the King David Hotel in 1947?
No,
did he try to sink the U.S. Liberty, USS Liberty?
Right.
Well, it was a Levant affair. Was that God's plan?
I mean, people who want to actually see the moral structure that Pence is referring to, I would just say, buy Nur Mursala's book, M-A-S-A-L-H-A, I believe, The Expulsion of the Palestinians. He just has all the primary documents. I mean, the guy is such a good scholar, such a good researcher. He went out and got all of the actual letters they exchanged. And you can just see, if, as they go through the process of creating the State of Israel, you can see the future presidents, you know, Golda Meir.
Well, it was a completely criminal enterprise. The Israel state's like a criminal.
It was a racist enterprise, very violent. But moreover, it was morally degenerate because they actually, in the letters, would ask one another, is there any moral concern for the violence that we are about to commit against the Palestinians? They actually, they put this question out, and I think it was kind of, they wanted to make sure that in their thought circle, they weren't going to have to deal with someone after the fact who was going to expose what they were up to, because they wanted to make absolutely sure they knew where they were going morally. They were going to violence, and they were going to drive out the Palestinians from their homes and kill a bunch of them, as many as they needed to. And they didn't want anyone in their thought circle, the future leaders, to take the position that, well, you know, what we did was wrong. They didn't want any of that to go public. So they had these private letters, which Mursala was able to put out, and you can just see it right there. I don't mean long-winded on this, but the idea that of Pence then, I mean, Pence does not seem like the sharpest, you know, tool.
Well, no,
ship.
I mean, it's like,
but
this is,
nevertheless, you know, this is insanity.
They don't deal with all the criminality, the role of Jewish gangsters and funneling the weapons there, and also people like Jewish people, legitimate Jewish businessmen funded this too, along with Jewish gangsters. There was the whole illegal funding of weapons there after 1946-47 that armed the Haganah.
Yeah, the Likud have access to all the weapons from, mainly they got them from the World War II surplus, of World War I surplus was all given to them, and then they had all this funny money that came in, so they were just armed to the teeth, and then they used the weapons, when the big push to drive out the Palestinians that occurred in, this very short kind of historically blacked out period, where they say, well, their official position is, well, a lot of the Palestinians left because they were afraid.
They were afraid. Yeah. 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 My favorite tweet was Ted Cruz's 4th of July tweet to the nation, Senator Ted Cruz in Texas. That? Happy 4th of July, Independence Day, birth of America or whatever. Today is also the 47th anniversary of the daring Entebbe raid. I was only 5 at the time, but I remember being inspired by the amazing courage of the IDF team that rescued the hostages and killed the terrorist. I thought that's a very Texan foreign policy.
Sure.
Really?
I mean,
that's what you think of on the 4th of July?
Yeah.
My point is, why are they compelled to do these things? It's embarrassing. Same with Asa Hutchinson. He did the same thing. I mean, they all got to swear this fealty to Israel. And then Congress just passed, I think this was a resolution, 412-9. Bipartisan support garnered criticism for, a resolution comes after Pramila Jayapal. She's a Democratic congresswoman from Washington, said on Saturday that Israel is a racist state. So Congress passed a resolution 412-9 saying it's not a racist state, therefore it isn't. But 412-9.
It's so funny because, I mean, because they don't have to have a constitution or having ratified one, they can be anything. Who knows what they are? They're like a subatomic particle, a quark. They're matter when they want to be and energy when they want to be. They can be.
Well, it's just Israel is not just a base for high level Jewish criminality. I mean, that's, it didn't solve the problem. Most Jews don't live there.
And the thing is like I have, get to talk to a lot of Israelis, and man, they're among the most deluded people I know. I mean, they have been, you think the American middle class has been brainwashed. These guys are lost in space in terms of who's manipulating them. And so The oligarchs, I think this is a point of weakness, that the oligarchs are, they are bifurcated even from normal Jews. And the Judeo-Masonic secret society can't have any exposure at all. I think
there's actually laws like in Texas and in Florida that if you support a boycott, divestment, and sanction of Israel, you can't like get a state job or a contract.
Yeah.
It's like, how'd that law slip in there?
Yeah, I mean, so but this shows you that Christianity as a political force has been obviously taken over by some group, because none of these ideas could
That speaks to like
a normal Christian.
Short of being a converso or Marano or crypto, the Jewish spirit or the Jewish vision has most people have internalized it because the Jewish control of media.
Right, that's true.
You know, and so in Hollywood and public discourse, and so media and these things. So people just adopt that. Of course, this goes way back. It goes back to the Scofield Bible, which goes back to the late 19th century, early 20th century, when that was commissioned to do this very thing, to take over the minds, the imaginations of evangelical Christians. They're rejected by the Catholic Church. Catholic Church never came out in supporting Zionism. So it captured the mind of evangelical Christians. And then you have the narrative, the Jewish narrative that became the dominant narrative in the second half of the 20th century and after 1945. And after 1965, the Jews had taken all the cultural sort of high ground. And so they were able to kind of carry out this sort of quiet revolution. The Jewish, the nudge aside, the wasp.
Muslims were evil, they were terrorists, and the Jews were the eternal victim.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, with the Holocaust narrative, they were, just the victim card was just played every single day to all of the Americans, and it just wired itself into our
mind. Did you see the thing they're complaining because this movie Oppenheimer, they have an Irish guy playing Oppenheimer, not a Jew?
They're complaining about it?
They're complaining that they're saying there was, I think it was, Newsweek or Time, that Oppenheimer shows that in Hollywood, the Jews don't count. It's like, are you kidding me?
Well, I think a black transvestite could have done a great job with Oppenheimer.
These are the people that having like black people play Hamilton.
So why can't they? I don't understand. I mean,
didn't they have a black woman play Anne Boleyn or something?
Yeah, and Cleopatra. So come on, it's like,
they're not complaining when they have non-Jews play Jewish historical characters. They're picking non-Jews because the non-Jewish actor or actress is more attractive.
Course.
Okay, so that's why you have like some hot woman playing Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the biopic,
right? It's mind control. But I can't watch Oppenheimer. I actually don't go to movies whatsoever. But I won't see that film because, having grown up in Japan, and spent a lot of time, little kid, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and then studying these the bombs, dropping the bomb, and Oppenheimer's role in all that. I mean, it's just raw evil. I mean, this, believe me, they created these cities without, they didn't firebomb them because they wanted to get clean data. And they had promised Oppenheimer and his technical crew that they would get him clean data. So they literally bombed these cities that had no fighting men in them. I mean, think about Japan, at this point, the men are gone. You've got the elderly, children and women, and they just blew them up. This is, the evil here is just...
they had sued for, they were already wanting to sue for peace,
Of course. I mean, the idea that was that the bomb is needed to prevent US casualties and an invasion is a lie, and it's documented as a lie by all of the military leaders of the time. And the Pacific Survey, they did the
strategic bombing survey.
Yeah. Right. They did a huge analysis of it. And they said that they wouldn't lose anybody, that frankly, the Japanese were trying to surrender. They had no military presence really that could even, there wasn't even going to be bamboo sticks they could throw at the soldiers. They would have just surrendered immediately. So there was no risk of U.S. life. And so what was going on is, it's very clear, well documented. They wanted clean data for the technocrats, specifically Oppenheimer. And so you're dealing with, when you have this individual's, very high level evil, and then his little cryptic comment, I have become the destroyer of worlds. Well, gee, I wonder what worlds he has in mind he wants to destroy. I mean, they named the place that they were going to set the bomb off, Trinity. I think this would give you a clue as to which worlds are going to, he wants to destroy with this little whiz bang.
But then they passed it along to the Soviets.
Of course, immediately, to them, because they want the drop and cover. They want to instill terror in us so that we will accept, the authoritarian federal government, who we have to have to protect us against the commies dropping the bomb, and then the viruses that will be getting to us.
You always need world government to deal with these things, right?
You have to have it. You can't trust your immune system. And so it's just, it's like this tragic situation in the Ukraine, which has come to a logical ending point, because the Ukrainians are very close to being out of, or NATO is very close to being out of munitions. And the Ukrainians are, they don't have an army at this point. I don't know how many men they have actually in the field, but they've lost the vast majority of their army. And if the Russians choose, they can just come right on through and capture everything. So this would be a great time to stop. But now they're talking about Poland getting involved. They might want it like a vampire. They just may go through these countries one after another and just, press gang all of the breeding age males into a NATO army that just walks into automatic weapon fire. I mean, at this point, I've listened to some of the Ukrainian soldiers who come back from the so-called counteroffensive, whatever they want to call this thing, and they say, well, here's what happens. This is the methodology. We go forward, we get shelled, we lose a lot of people, and then we retreat. And then this happens every single time. And this happens in 100 times a day and all across the so-called front lines. And it's been happening now for a month and a half. I don't know, 40,000 fatalities or 100,000 casualties altogether. It's just a way to genocide the population. And at the end of this, no doubt what is now Ukraine will be, ruled by BlackRock and the other, financial interests who are already in there. What will happen to the Ukrainian people? I mean, it's diaspora time. I mean, how many are in Canada now? Like 700,000 or something, some huge number. But they're second-class citizens. They have very few of them have any money. They don't speak the native language, so that they're going to have a hard time, moving into the middle class very easily. And so it's just this tragic situation where the European is bamboozled by the fact that he or she doesn't understand that a group has taken over their political system and has lifetime actors in the roles of presidents and EU administrators. And it's strange, because that understanding is the only way you can have a realistic or logical understanding of what's going on in Ukraine.
Well, this explains, the policies regarding Ukraine. It goes back to our discussion regarding these congressmen, senators in Israel, is that they're either blackmailed or bribed.
Yeah.
Indirectly, because they control the campaign funding and the media coverage. So it does matter who's in control of the media, who's in control of the financial system. The top 10 donors to the Democratic Party are Jewish oligarchs. The top 8 to the Republican Party are Jewish oligarchs. They're the big money. Right. They're the big money men.
How many of those are in favor of a transgender agenda?
Yeah. And if you wonder about being compromised, you look at Jeffrey Epstein, that type of operation. Yeah.
Now, I wanted to mention, there was that White House protocol for how the military should handle the transgenders. Mm-hmm. It actually comes from the president. Supposedly it was released last week. It's not a secret document, though it hadn't been released to the public for some reason. But anyway, it came out. And I think it's a really useful thing for citizens, clear-minded citizens, to be aware of, because it's a very simple way of showing, like, family members or people, if you're in a discussion, that this is 100% agenda. The transgender, the Biden transgender phenomena is just, they are deliberately creating transgenders. And so the protocol for military people who want to come in to the military and then have sex change operations is that the military will pay, and I'm not going to list everything. I'm just going to tell you some of the stuff. It's like they will pay for, you know, the hormones, the voice therapy, laser hair removal, voice feminization surgery. Now there's they're making a better soldier there, aren't they? Facial contorting, body contorting, breast augmentation, genital mutilation. They'll actually do what they call it lower surgery. They give you psychological counseling. You're going to need a lot of that. But so other things which are just preposterous that you know in terms of why would the taxpayer pay to have this done in the creation of a soldier? I mean, how will this individual defend us? Which should be the point of the army, but nevertheless, that isn't the real reason that I wanted to bring this up. It's because they have a specification that people who identify as transgender may receive an indefinite waiver for physical fitness standards. Okay, so this could become easily a de facto permanent situation. So in other words, you cannot deploy this individual. And then is the coup de grace. They state that service members who identify as transgender will be considered non-deployable for up to 300 days while taking hormones for their transition period. Now, these hormones are typically given for life. So you are not creating, under these criteria, a soldier that can be deployed, right? What you are creating is it'd be called like a free ride, a full scholarship in the university.
Yeah, this is just another example of an institution being co-opted to promote it, like the schools. This is just another.
Exactly. They just so there it is. This is what they're doing. This is
why does insurance cover it? How is that an insurable thing? Right. It's a way to subsidize it and promote it. Did Congress pass a budget earmarking funds for this, or is just something decision that the Pentagon makes with trillions of dollars?
Federal, the commander in chief protocols that somehow he can just put into place and just they'll come up with the money somehow.
I'm asking a naive question. How does this benefit military readiness?
It's just the opposite.
Obviously,
it obviously destroys recruitment.
What military advancement does it give to the country, therefore the country's security, supposedly?
Well, think about the recruiting failure, right? That we are in absolute deficit just to try to create a little, you know, tin soldier army that the U.S. supposedly has.
Yes.
You know, but we can't get enough people to come in. Well, one of the main reasons is because they realize that when they get in the service, that there is all this both racial and transgender propaganda and indoctrination that they have to go through. Red-blooded European heritage males don't want to do that, so they don't go into the army anymore. But you see, this works to the favor, right, of the people who want this agenda to swamp America, because the military service basically goes away. And what's in its place is your taxpayer-funded creation of the transgender soldier who cannot be deployed because he's taking hormone therapies. I mean, it's very dangerous to have an army, you know, that is like that because, Mexico may decide to try it, you know. I mean, they have like a lot of historical issues with the Southwest and, you know, if you see the army just collapse like this, well, I mean, I'm being facetious, but this is how obviously destructive to the national interest this policy is. And the only way this can be explained is that the national interest is not the issue here. It is just to create a transgender culture to destroy the nation.
Mm-hmm. That's right, with Anthony Blinken, who said that he brings up LGBTQ issues any chance he gets.
Sure.
He's meeting like with Saudi Arabia. And what would you, I wonder what they think of this guy. Every time he comes to me, he starts talking about queers. It's like, why are you obsessed with this? Right. And was in Hungary, the was built, our ambassador to Hungary is a homosexual Jew.
Yeah.
Who's promoting that degeneracy in that country.
Yeah, so yeah. The European males, you know, in the Ukraine, they get sent to the front and where they're slaughtered. And the transgender is protected and is given a non-deployable status. I mean, if you put this thing into the Ukraine, you would promote, you know, hundreds of thousands of transgenders because no one wants to go to the front. They know it's a death sentence.
Well,
right?
if the armed services were serious about their mission, not one dime would go to this stuff. In fact, anyone proposing it would be court-martialed. You know, if
it's
not,
just
you
know, ridiculous.
You know,
it is so absurd. It's part of the clown world. It's when they release this information for a purpose.
But didn't Biden just name like some lady the head of the U.S. Navy or something?
Yeah, I don't think she's trans. I don't think she's transgender.
What I'm saying is that generals and this by
but
definition
it's feminization. You know, she's part of the first woman ever. You know, head the Navy. So
there shouldn't be any women generals because generals should have a certain amount of combat experience, and women should not be in combat. The purpose of the military isn't there for equity or to give people or to entertain people's feelings. It's there to defend the country. That's why, you know, women have no role in combat. They can perform some roles, but it's simply not worth the effort, the recruitment effort. The dropout rate's exceedingly high with women anyway. But again, whether it's homosexuals or women, again, you're using the military as sort of a laboratory for experimenting and promoting this stuff. It's not what its purpose. That's why we pay taxes for it, supposedly. It's not there to experiment with this and squander billions, if not trillions of dollars, which evidently they've done.
So the long-term
God knows what.
The long-term goal is just to create a slave state.
Yeah.
And that you don't want a military that can, you know, defend the population, that would be a problem to control it. So here's one of the ways to diminish it down to nothing.
Yeah, we have a bunch of women generals and admirals. I'm sort of effeminate general, male general now, like Mark Milley, you know.
What can you say? It's just ridiculous. They're accelerating. They're the clown world destruction of America is not static. It's obvious that they're really trying to accelerate it. And you could just imagine where the nation will be in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, apparently they thought the country didn't have any enemies, so they could indulge all this insanity. Maybe the Cold War kept certain level of insanity because of the threat, the military threat posed by the Soviet Union. And
if they go through the Ukrainian population, I've heard some, you know, some people who are like studying this say that they're pretty close to the bottom of the barrel. And if they bring in the Poles who, you know, they're, what's his name? The president is bellicose and he's itching to get at
but are the Poles willing to do that?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, you know. This will really be a really interesting thing if they're really
they're gonna fill the breach. I mean, geez,
are they gonna go into Ukraine and go up against the Russians after?
Well, I know they hate I know the Poles hate the Russians, and that's that animosity is exploited by NATO, but are they dumb enough to
Well, Putin gave a speech yesterday, I think it was yesterday, where he actually outlined this. He said, you know, the Poles would be well served to remember, you know, all of these, he was talking about all these details in history that would make it a really bad idea for the Poles to be seduced by NATO into agreeing to be the next up to the plate and attack Russia. And there's no doubt that, you know, for him to make that as a public speech, that they are getting information.
Well, you saw that ad I sent you about NATO.
Yeah.
Was that bizarre?
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Biden, it's NATO time, Jack. And they're posing. I mean, it's like, it's fantasy. It's like, it's almost like one of those comic book worlds or something.
Yeah, it's a video game. And that's what they want the public to, that's the perspective they want the public to have. They don't want to, public to ask serious questions about this mess, because once again, we have a situation where they cannot discuss it. They cannot have any debate on the Ukrainian issue in public that is legitimate because it's not defensible. I mean, there's just the idea that, that it is worthwhile for the Ukraine to lose the nation, to have it go extinct on the principle of, well, we have to defend our, you know, our sovereignty. And
well, there's something, obviously, there's an alternative, there's a other agendas here afoot. It's not there to defend Ukraine. You saw that thing, the Ukraine Black Sea grain deal is a trafficking hub.
Oh, God, that is just a nightmare.
Russia publicly declared that they would not renew the Ukraine Black grain deal. The deal was launched last summer with, this is Helena Glass wrote this at the National Voice. It says the deal was launched last summer with specific guarantees to Russia as well as Ukraine. The problem, the West didn't uphold their side of the deal, continued to levy sanctions on Russia's fertilizer and grain, including shipping and insurance issues. Every major media in the West is tasked with promoting the same story, same verbiage, same dastardly notations, same propaganda. What they don't inform us is the fact that Ukraine's entire cereal exports account for just $9 billion in total value, representing 19% of total exports or 1% of its GDP. In fact, Ukraine's trade has been highlighted to show their cereal accounts for the majority of its exports. However, according to the UN Comtrade, of all goods exported, other represents a large category at 40%, other. Headlines, the need will, here we go. It's the deal meant that Ukraine ships, this was the grain deal, during the war, the deal meant that Ukraine ships could freely move about the Black Sea without restrictions. But there are numerous oddities about Ukraine's and the West assertions. It is unknown what is truly in the shipping or railway containers, given Ukraine was shipping was a shipping point for children's and slave trafficking. Could that be why the West is now so incensed? The grain deal did not go to the nations in need, but was sent to transit points in the European Union. The global trade of cereal represents just $159 billion, meaning Ukraine at its best accounts for roughly 5%. Russia called on the West, the UN, and Turkey to abide by the contract and relieve, I'm sorry, let me do this. Here we go. Abide by the contract. The amount of cereal exported by Ukraine has already been surpassed by Russia and Argentina. Obviously, there's something else afoot, and given the amplified concern over the grain, it is much more likely that the grain housed something else much more profitable, something along the lines of drugs, organs, women slaves, and children. According to the World Integrated Trade, the category other trade is labeled service, $15.5 billion exported on $10.7 billion imported. According to Ukraine's agriculture calendar, as provided by the U.S., Ukraine has only just harvested its agriculture products, i.e. winter wheat and corn, and nothing has been exported since last summer and fall. Yet a row with Poland last April was about spoiled grain imports that were subsidized by USAID. When the Black Sea deal was created, Zelensky declared that Ukraine would serve the global good and export its grain to Sudan, Somalia, and Yemen. Sudan received nothing from Ukraine, but instead, what happened there? Sorry, blocked out. Let me go back here.
Well, I mean, you know, the upshot here is that the Black Sea now is blockaded effectively. Grain from Russia and the Ukraine is not going to be transported there. And the Ukrainian crop and the Russian crops are not heading toward Europe. So the question is, what is Europe going to do to, you know, find food? And then the point that the author of that article was making about the sex slaves is just so logical. I mean, I didn't see hard evidence of it, but the case is so logical that, you know, if you think about it, we were talking before we started recording, and I was saying, you know, to get out of the Ukraine, which is what everyone who is able financially to do it is doing, you have the people who are then press ganged into military service, but those who are not are very vulnerable, women and children, and no one is there to protect them. You know, the Ukrainian government is obviously, you know, evil, And so to think that these groups, the women and the children, are just there to be harvested by these, you know, by the oligarchs, boy, it sure is logical. I would love to see more exposition on that possibility.
Well, with all the Ukrainian men being killed, what are the women to do?
Yeah, exactly.
And when you create these theaters of conflict, you create refugees, large amounts of them having to walk, you know, 40, 50 miles to refugee centers, and they're ripe for exploitation, which has occurred in every war. Not to mention the rape that occurs, you know.
The degree, but that author made a really good point that it could be a really large fraction of the Ukrainian.
Well, the numbers are off, right? I mean, basically what he's saying is there's a problem with the numbers, meaning something, it's basically there's money being laundered, covering up illegal transactions, not to mention the fact that as much as 7% of the weaponry that goes to Ukraine is unaccounted for and is probably being embezzled and sold off to other areas, other parts of the world. And the same thing with people. And again, when you create an area of hostilities, an arena for warfare, you create conditions like this. It is inevitable that people are going to come in. And I wouldn't be too far. I don't think it's too crazy to think that those planning the war to begin would think ahead and plan for this.
Of course not. In fact, I would say it was one of the primary goals of the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
is to enslave and use the children and women.
This happened in the 90s in the Balkans, and this happened in Russia when the economy collapsed. It happens in Germany in the 1920s, where the women have to resort to sex work or they're being exploited because of their desperation. Vietnam and Thailand and all that. During the Vietnam War, Thailand became a huge hub for sex trafficking and you know, sex work because of the large amount of soldiers there. So this is a inevitable consequence of war. So when you start a war, these things are inevitable, and you are responsible for these things because you know going into it that this is going to happen.
Yeah, and I hope that the rest of Europe, you know, it benefits from some exposition of this horrible process that's going on and realizes they're next on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm.
That if they are dragged into an eternal genocidal war against Russia, that what they're seeing now in the Ukraine is going to happen in Germany, in Poland, I mean, all the way across Europe, they're going to do it.
That might be one of the plans of the oligarchs throughout the world, is when you destroy the productive economies of the West and the middle class that those productive economies support, you create a very large population, desperate people, among which you can harvest the most attractive.
Yeah, there it is.
You know, and so what's the point of being a billionaire if you can't do that, right? That's how they look at it.
Yeah, and that's the moral perspective they have. We're just, I mean, they look at the Ukrainian people and army just like, like weapons they keep in the basement. I mean, they're just there to be used, you know. They have no empathy, no human connection whatsoever. They're just murderous.
No, it's like the equivalent of World War II of using your ration of chocolate and your access to nylon to get women when you occupied your Germany or something.
Yeah.
And so it's the same mentality, some desperate women. And so, you know, when you start a war, you destabilize an area and you disrupt people's lives in some sort of geopolitical, you know, chess match that you're playing. Like Victoria Nuland doesn't care about this, you know. Certainly the people at the State Department or the Pentagon don't care about this. But you're never going to create just arenas of vast human suffering and exploitation. And Ukraine, I think, as I've been reading about this, as far back as 2012, about the Ukraine being a main point for this. So it has to be much worse, you know, since the war broke out.
Oh, my God, 100 times worse now, yeah.
Yeah, so one of those things. Okay, Joe. Yes,
all right, Tim. Well, thanks for the discussion, and we'll get them next week, brother.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.